And welcome back to Coast, Robert Zimmerman with us. We're going to take your calls as we talk about space, his thoughts on COVID-19 as well. And again, his website is behindtheblack.com. And welcome back to Coast. We're back with Robert Zimmerman, space historian and science journalist as well. Your books are still available, aren't they, Robert?
Yes. Genesis, the Story of Apollo 8, is available as an e-book on my website, as well as all regular vendors. My second book, Leaving Earth, which is mainly about post-Apollo man's flight, which means it's got a lot of stuff about the Russians and how our society changed post-Apollo. That's also available as an ebook. Universe in a Mirror about Hubble, yep, that's still available, both as an ebook and as a paper hardback. You can get Capitalism Space for free on my website. That's a PDF download. It's only about 40 pages, but it actually outlines the policy in a very, you know, I'm a good writer. I write for the general public. Those very basic terms. It illustrates why, how absurd it's been to depend on NASA to build anything. And that's available also on my website. And I have a science fiction book that I wrote called Pioneer, that is about to come out in a month or two. The Kickstarter campaign will come out and made into a video game. That hasn't happened yet.
That would be cool.
But that would be very cool. Pioneer is a first contact story. I actually wrote it in the 80s, and it sat in gathering dust. And about 3 years ago, I said, you know, this is a good book. And so I published it, and it's been selling really well as an ebook. And it's first contact story. And it actually, I did a pretty good job of capturing where we are now. 35 years ago, I had a good handle on where we were going to go. It's about private space, and it's also about how individuals. What are our motives? What are our real motives to do things? That's the question the characters ask and the reader has to ask. Why do people do the things they do? And they do some interesting things in this attempt to find. Answer the question of this first contact. They find a body on Mars of an astronaut who had disappeared 40 years earlier on an asteroid that was orbiting beyond Jupiter.
Whoa.
How did he get to Mars?
Read the book.
And when they find him, he has a memo book, a memo pad, and a robot hand that is clearly alien.
Ooh.
So they now have to find him and find the aliens, and that's the story of Pioneer. And so that's also available on my website, you know. And of course, there's Behind the Black. I post.
Do we get back to the moon before anybody gets there?
At this moment in time, it's a good question. I'm not sure. You know, Trump is making a big deal. He wants to get back with humans by 2024. That hasn't yet been funded by Congress, so
no.
I don't know if that's going to happen. He's pushing hard.
Well, and with all the stimulus money going out the window, who knows what's going to
happen? Who knows what will happen? But the simple fact is it's a very tight schedule, and he's depending on the Space Launch System to do that, and that's not a very good bet. Nonetheless, I mentioned Starship at great length, SpaceX's effort. The way that development is going, a ship is designed to do interplanetary travel, and so it could very well happen. If we don't get to the moon next first, it's almost certainly going to be the Chinese who will put people there next. But if the American government and our people go with the American ideas of freedom and individual personal responsibility and allow people to follow their dreams, competition, private enterprise, if we follow that, we will very shortly have enormous resources to go almost anywhere in the solar system we want, because we'll have multiple companies competing and developing and coming up with new ideas on how to do things cheap and fast and smart. And SpaceX demonstrate that. Rocket Lab, I mentioned them quickly in the first hour, they demonstrate that as well. Because they came up with a small rocket that's very inexpensive to launch. They put up CubeSats. They've launched a whole bunch of times already. And they're now quickly dancing on their toes to figure out how to make their first stage reusable. And they're figuring out how to do it.
Okay, let's go to the phones.
Sure.
Let's pick it up by going to Glenn in Texas to get us started, east of the Rockies. Hey, Glenn, thanks.
Hey, George. Hey, Robert. How you doing tonight?
Okay. I hope you are, too. It's been a while.
It's been nice and calm down here in Texas.
Good.
Robert, I wish to say that I wish we were associates. We're brothers from another mother. I agree with everything you say. My brother has been with the space shuttle program since its inception and finale. I agree with everything you say about the future of manned space exploration. We talked briefly after the Chelyabinsk strike about what we ought to be doing to help prevent future catastrophes. I'm about 30, well, less than 30 miles from SpaceX at Boca Chica.
Oh, cool. You get to see, you if you want to, you can drive over and see things blow up or launch maybe.
Oh, I have many times.
Oh,
it's a wonderful place. It's a beautiful place, actually.
You know, in terms of asteroid impacts, once again, the best way we can protect ourselves from future asteroid impacts is to be a very vibrant, innovative, competitive, and robust, have a very robust competitive space industry in space. Because they're the ones living and working in space, are going to have the technology and the know-how to deal with that quickly. And until we have that, anything we try to do here on Earth is going to be improvisation that is going to be somewhat faulty. And so the fastest way we can protect ourselves from asteroids hitting us is to get a robust, independent, free private enterprise industry in space of free people. And that's hopefully where we're going. That's the best I can say.
If we get there.
I hope so. I mean, it's all a question of what's going to happen here in the United States over the next 3-4 months, because I'm telling you right now, I wrote an essay on Behind the Black called "Persecution Is Now Cool," in which I outlined a whole bunch of examples that have happened to me in my personal life where I have been literally blackballed, not because I've done anything evil or wrong or hurt anyone. I just simply express my opinion. And some people, that there's too many cultural people in our culture today who don't understand what freedom is. Freedom is allowing the person you disagree with to have the ability to speak their mind.
Nowadays, Robert, if you don't agree with someone, they chastise you.
That's right.
They
and
battle
on
with
my
them.
Website, for example, anyone can write anything they want on the comments page. Anybody. The only rules I have is no obscenities, and you don't use insults, no ad hominem attacks.
Yep.
You act like a civilized human being, and you think.
And you get to say what you want.
I ban people because they break those two simple
rules. Sure.
But what happens instead is that the conversation rises to a level of maturity. People suddenly, you know, instead of cursing, they say, well, I got to use a real word here. And suddenly the meanings of what they're saying comes out, and they start to write intelligently. And I've learned a lot from my commenters because of that. And so that's the same thing in terms of freedom. We have to – this is why I'm not sure space is going to happen like it should, even though the Trump administration is trying to let private enterprise do the job. We might not be a free nation in another 6 months. We might not, because too many Americans seem to have forgotten what freedom is all about.
Let's go to Chris, Columbus, Ohio. Welcome to the program, Chris. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a space question for
sure.
Emma. With all of these satellites, they're popping up there, 60 satellites at a time, releasing them and all of this, and all that they've released all these years in space. As I understand it, geosynchronous orbit, 17,500 mile an hour circling the Earth. Well, my question is, with all of these satellites, we're going to have to send somebody up to clean up the space debris.
Chris, let me answer the question quickly. One. Starlink satellites are not a geosynchronous orbit. They are a low Earth orbit. All of them are, the way SpaceX is designing them, they all will, once no longer needed, they will deorbit themselves. They've actually plugged that into their construction. So they are not, at least the SpaceX Starlink satellites are not an issue here. Private enterprise is actually right now beginning to deal with dead satellites in geosynchronous orbit. A company, Maxar, Northrop Grumman. They've developed something called the Mission Extension Vehicle. It's a robot satellite that attaches itself to geosynchronous communication satellites that have no more fuel left and therefore are dead. And what it does is it acts as a fuel depot. It basically acts as a new engine, and it brings that satellite back to life. They've already launched one and successfully brought a dead satellite back to life so it can be used as a communication satellite again, and they're building more of them. And why are they doing it? It's not the goodness of their heart. They're making money. The communication satellites has a perfectly workable satellite in orbit. Instead of having to launch a new one for a lot of money, they can, for a lot less, get that satellite working again. So they save money. It makes the, improves their bottom line. So everyone's making money. And guess what? The junk is going away. It's becoming usable again. And there is a profit center here. Someone wants to start a business for cleaning up the space junk in low Earth orbit. There's been a number of technology test satellites to try to figure out ways in which to remove this stuff, make money doing it. And there is money to be made because people who are putting up, we're going to have commercially private space stations in the next few years. That is happening. And those private space stations will not want space junk hitting their hotels in orbit, hurting their passengers. And so they will be willing to invest money to clean up the junk. Let's, private enterprise freedom, it's the solution always.
Let's go back to Chris just to see. Did you get all your questions in, Chris? Go ahead.
Yes. I work at a hospital. I'm a nurse's aide, okay, during this COVID-19.
Yeah. Chris.
And I also have a relative who's a coroner. And this subject come up during a Memorial Day when we all got together as much as we could, the family. Just saying this, that all deaths, regardless of what they are, COVID-19, that's my relative said that's illegal. No coroner would sign a death certificate with false information. So whomever you got this information from, it's got to be bogus.
Well, I can tell you, Chris, this, that... funeral homes.
And we're talking about hospitals, what they're doing.
For one, a death certificate, when it comes to COVID, you have a lot of flexibility, the coroner. And if the government allows them to change the, or demands, and this has actually happened, demands that they change the cause of death to COVID if it's presumed to be the case. And that has been a decision made in both New York, this was just done in, New Jersey's done this. Several different states have ruled that the state governments, the health departments have said it is acceptable to list COVID-19 as the cause of death if the symptoms and the location appear to be COVID, even if there's been no test made. That means that a lot of people, the symptoms are very similar. A lot of people have the flu and die from that. They'll assign it now to COVID. Now, there are evidence in, and you can go to my website and do a search for funeral directors or COVID, and you'll see the article. There are funeral directors in New York State are telling, they're saying very clearly their customers are saying, my father didn't die of COVID. He had cancer for years. He had Alzheimer's. But they're assigning COVID to everything, and this is what people are saying. So some of it's anecdotal. Some of it is documented. Now, we live in a time of paranoia because people lie to us all the time, which means we don't trust. And I agree that this is a terrible thing to think governments are doing, but I see it happening, and I think it's important that people be aware of that.
And it's happened since the beginning of time.
Yeah. I mean, when power,
it's not new.
Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. We have given too much power to our governments and to the people in governments, and they can't help it. They want more. And they can't help using the power they have to obtain more. And that means corruption and lies. And that's what they do.
Jan in Brooklyn. Let's go to her. Hi, Jan. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Listen. This freaks me out that all these that satellites are supposed to beam 5G at us. What do you think about that?
5G, Robert, have you had time to investigate that?
Well, 5G is not necessarily satellites. 5G is actually just simply improving the speed of how the Internet functions. And it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with satellites at all. It will improve use of satellites because your communications on your cell phone will be faster. There are issues of 5G and security that are a separate issue, and that has to do with Chinese efforts to dominate the 5G upgrade. And there's real suspicions about whether China can be trusted in this. I think almost not at all. But in terms of actual, that's not a satellite issue. The satellite issue is just simply providing a way to bounce the signals from one point to another very fast and accessible everywhere. You know, now you have to plug into or get to a cell tower, and there are not cell towers everywhere, but you put satellites covering the whole globe, then wherever you are, you will be able to get on the internet.
Mark in Baltimore, welcome to the show. Hi, Mark. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Stuart, for taking my call, and as usual, great shows that
you're
having.
Thank you, sir.
And I'd like to say, number one, I've read those books, especially the one on Apollo 8. I thought that was an excellent
great book, wasn't it?
Yes, for the guest. That was a great book that you wrote, sir, because we took a big chance with Apollo 8. I remember James Webb was the administrator at the time, and that was the first manned Saturn V launch.
Yes, correct.
It wasn't planned to be that way in the beginning, but we made it that way in order to get to the during the race to the moon. But my question is this. I watched the NASA channel religiously, and I watched the development of NASA's, what they called Apollo on steroids, you know, their space launch system, and we have a working spacecraft, the Orion spacecraft, that was orbited and tested, and it's a great flaw, it worked flawlessly, but I'm wondering, I can't get an answer, I'm just wondering why, you know, all the elements have been tested, the boosters have been tested and all that, the launch pads are there, why isn't it stacked and it's like 4 years late for the first SLS flight.
I have to tell you one, they have not flown the Orion capsule. When they did a test in 2014, they were supposedly testing a heat shield. It was a test vehicle that they launched. They were testing the heat shield. They had already decided before that launch that the heat shield they were testing wasn't going to be the one they'd use on the final vehicle. They didn't make a big deal about this because it made no point. There was no point doing the flight. The reason they did the flight was to try to garner some lobbying support for the program. As for SLS itself, they have never stacked or built anything. They're only now, finally, 20 years later, beginning to assemble the pieces for the launch, hopefully next year. And in fact, the first core stage is being assembled to do its first static fire test, hopefully by the autumn. That's the first static fire test. You know, SpaceX is building Starship, and they're doing the tests now at the very beginning of development. NASA is not going to do its first static fire test of the full core stage until now, 20 years after they began development, near the end of the development program. So you're asking why it hasn't been done yet. Well, it's a government program. They don't take risks, and so they work slowly. And they're not interested in going fast because the longer it goes, the longer the jobs last. It becomes it's not, for the congressman who funded, this is not going into space. This is a jobs program. This is to say, I brought jobs to my district. And it doesn't matter if those jobs ever build anything at all. And so the length of time it's taken to build SLS and Orion and the cost are not bugs. That's a feature of that system. And it's a problem. It's why government doesn't work very well. It's why you don't depend on government to build things. Government should be asking private enterprise to build it.
Robert, tell us a little bit about the 10th anniversary fundraiser.
Oh, yes. Every July I do this three times a year for different events, but every July I run an anniversary fundraiser because I got to pay my bills. And I used to have advertising on the website, and some of it was through Google. And about 6 years ago, I realized that Google is a very corrupt organization, and they were screwing me. And so I dumped them, and I decided instead of having any ads on the website, I'm just going to ask my readers if they're willing to donate.
And the website is behindtheblack.com. We're going to come back and take final calls with Robert Zimmerman in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And next hour, we're going to talk dreams with Deidre Barrett and Robert Zimmerman with us, space historian. Robert, I'll let you finish up your fundraiser there. The clock got us.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention to the clock.
That's all right.
I don't ask anyone. No one's required to give me a dime. They can come to my website and look at it for free.
How about a quarter?
It doesn't pay for anyone to give me just a quarter. Because, PayPal does take a cut.
Oh, you said you didn't want a dime. I thought maybe a quarter.
No, people can see it for free, but if they want to donate, they can. And it's really surprising to me how many people subscribe where they donate, where they literally donate $2, $5, $15 a month for something they could get for free. But that's a level of support, and I really appreciate it. And what it does is it frees me, because I don't have any specific employer who can fire me. I don't use Twitter. I don't use Facebook. I don't use Google. Google is completely non-present on my website and on my life, actually. And so, granted, that kind of limits my exposure a little bit, but they have no hold on me. And so, therefore, I am free to say anything I want, and they can't do anything to me. And getting donations from my listeners as a support gives me even more freedom in that respect, because I'm not beholden to anybody.
Absolutely. Let's take final calls here for you. Let's go to Jacqueline in Brooklyn, New York. Welcome to the program. Hi, Jacqueline.
Thank you very much. Hi, George.
Thank
Hello,
you.
Bob. Not that you need it, Bob, because your information is completely valid, but I just wanted to give you some extra validation. I was explaining to Tommy that both my parents were in the same nursing home. My father passed away in the middle of April from pneumonia, and on his death certificate, they did, in fact, put suspect COVID. They were, in fact, instructed to not test any residents for the virus at that time. And if they exhibited symptoms, to assume, and we all know what happens when we assume, that he had the virus, and other residents there had the virus if they exhibited such symptoms. I had a post-mortem exam done for many reasons with what was going on in the nursing home. And the pathologist determined that he had regular, my father had regular bacterial pneumonia. And on the death certificate, they had put suspect COVID. And all they had to do at the nursing home was simply check his blood. They would have determined that. And if they had properly treated him with the antibiotics to treat the bacterial pneumonia, he would probably be alive today. So what you're saying is 1,000,000% accurate, Bob.
Jacqueline, first of all, I have to tell you, it's such a pleasure to hear someone with a nice Brooklyn accent from my home.
Ah, thank you.
You sound so much like someone I used to know named Jacqueline in New York.
Oh.
Anyway, it's really tragic. I mean, there is, you know, Goebbels had had something called the big lie, and we have been subjected to a lot of big lies over the last few years, and that's really, it's getting us to a point where people don't trust what anyone says. But the trouble is that the people in power in a lot of places are not trustworthy. They lie, and it's most important as a citizen to not be credulous, to be doubtful, to be skeptical of people in power, and to question them and to challenge them at all times. And considering the abject failure of the federal government for the last 30 years in accomplishing anything it's supposed to have done, to keep asking it to do more is insane. It's not even a question of, it's not partisan. They can't really get anything done well, so why are we asking them to do more and to give them more power? What did Einstein say? The definition of insanity is trying to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. And this is, we're being insane here, asking the government to do this stuff, because they're not trustworthy. They're just not.
Next up, let's go to Mike in El Monte, California. Welcome to the program, Michael. Go ahead.
This is Mike. Thank you.
Hey, Mike.
Has anybody come up with a harmonic vibrations for curing the virus?
Sound resonance for that. What do you think of that, Robert?
I have no idea. My, once again, this virus is like SARS and Hong Kong flu, a lot of other previous SARS-based viruses. We don't really have vaccines for any of them, and we're not likely to get a vaccine for this. The way the humanity, Darwin, the way it works, this is just a tragedy. We lived with, and people had the courage to live with it forever, is you need to let your young people develop immunity to it. And once that immunity is far enough spread throughout the population, the virus has no place to go, and it dies off on its own. And that is a very safe, rational approach to treating the disease, because once again, the immune systems of young people aren't harmed by it. They throw it off. Under 10 years old, no one has died. Zero. Worldwide, they have not found any deaths from anyone under 10 years old. Kids don't even seem to get sick from it. And so you let them get the disease, get the virus infected, and so that therefore at that point they develop immunities and the virus has no place to go. That's the solution. We're not. Whether we get a vaccine for this or not is very doubtful.
What's taking them so long, Robert?
Well, you know, we don't have a vaccine for SARS. We don't have a vaccine for a lot of previous viruses. We don't have a vaccine for AIDS, be aware. And so this is not a simple thing.
That's true.
You know,
especially if it's made in a lab.
You know, people think that they watch too much TV, you know, where suddenly people can do almost amazing things almost instantaneously. This is the real world. It's not likely that a vaccine here is going to come out of the woodwork in less than 6 months. And the simple fact is, once again, the stats don't justify the fear and the reactions to this disease. They don't justify that. That doesn't mean we should not deal with it. I was advocating right off the bat that people should be washing their hands a lot more because that's how you transfer the disease. But other than that, shutting down the economy is absurd. It's done far more harm and killed far more people. And that's really a tragedy.
And destroyed many lives.
Yes, and destroyed many lives. You're absolutely right.
Wayne in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Wayne, thanks for calling, sir.
Good evening, gentlemen. And thank you for taking my call, George.
Sure.
Yes, I wanted to comment on, first of all, the pharmacist Ben and Dr. Wallach has always said all disease is caused by inflammation. That's the core of all disease.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked earlier tonight, when it was on the news too, that the death rate in Korea and the COVID rate in Korea is the lowest, I guess, of any country in the world. And you got to think about what their diet is. Their diet, very low wheat diet, a lot of rice, a lot of seafood, and a lot of vitamin C. And that vitamin C comes from the hot spice they love over there. They love hot spices, and they just have lots of hot foods over there in their country. So I believe it's just our diet over here is what's killing us. You know, it's our inflammatory diet.
Mr. Science Reporter, that could be.
I don't have actually a comment. I don't have anything wrong with trying to eat well, and maybe that will improve your chances. But I can't speak to that specifically.
You
know, for one thing, that there's evidence that suggests that just simply going outside and exposing yourself to sunlight by doing outdoor activities increases your vitamin D.
Yes,
and like all seasonal diseases, that reduces the chances of the virus hurting you. So, of course, what did our governments do? They put us under house arrest where we couldn't go outside. Think about the
stay in, right?
Every decision involved with this. It's absurd.
This is not, though, as some would say, a hoax.
No, there's a real virus here. There's no doubt about that. And it's a real issue, and it shouldn't be taken nonchalantly, and I'm certainly not trying to suggest that. But you look at it rationally, and you, once again, you don't focus on models. They've all been wrong. You focus on the actual data. The actual data right off the bat said it was only affecting these elderly sick. You must protect them then. It wasn't hurting young people, so you don't worry about them getting the infection. And it also had a death rate that appeared to be close to the flu. It wasn't proven in the beginning, but it appeared to be the case. And now, with the tests going on right now, without question, all these test results with all the new cases prove that the death rate is really comparable to the flu. That proves it. We should be encouraged by all these. This gives us hope because it shows that many people get this disease and nothing happens to them. And so we should be hopeful from this. Instead, people are, and of course the press, they suddenly stop talking about deaths. It's only cases now. We have lots of new cases. But the number of deaths are not going up.
No. They superimpose
them. That means that the death rate for this disease is infinitesimal. It's not the big deal they're making it. So you deal with this stuff rationally. That's my approach. That's where I come from.
Let's go to Mitchell, Seattle, Washington, where they've had a lot of cases. Mitchell, go ahead, sir.
Oh, yes. I even caught a piece of that back in late January.
What did it feel like?
Oh, it felt like the flu, but it was worse because my lungs were filling up with juice.
Yeah.
Every hour and a half or two. I'm
glad you're well.
It was rough.
And, still here, Mitchell, thank God.
But, I'm like 50 years old, so. Well, most people, I think, I have asthma, too, so it was easier for me.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
Panicking on it, you know, because I'm used to not being able to breathe. But, anyway, the reason I called is because, I got a couple things to talk about, but I'm just going to talk about space right now. I want to build a space station, one of them big ring-style ones.
You want to build it?
Well, I just want it to be built.
Oh, okay.
I want my people to go out into the stars, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's the first step, is getting people out in space. It's actually a good backup, you know, place to live. But I want to understand how people are going to survive on Mars at 40% gravity. I think some primate studies should be done on something that has gravity at 40%.
What do you think of that, Robert?
Oh, Mitchell, you're bringing up some wonderful points. I mean, first of all, they were supposed to put a centrifuge on ISS to do exactly the kind of studies you're talking about. They didn't do it, and the government's in action. We have done no research on low gravity situations. How much gravity do you need to eliminate problems? Such as bone density loss and cardiovascular changes and balance changes. And all the problems, the spinal problems, vision, all those issues might be solved with only a tenth percent gravity field, which then simplifies your engineering problems enormously in terms of building the ring-shaped station you're talking about. And so this is the kind of work that, yes, has to be done. This is a major component of my book, Leaving Earth, which subtitle was Space Stations, Interplanetary Spaceships, and the Search for Interplanetary Travel. The idea is you build a space station to learn exactly the kind of questions you're asking. Now, a ring station might happen in the near future with private stations, because the company Axiom has a deal. They're going to put up their own modules and attach them to ISS. They'll be their private modules. They will be able to do anything they want in those modules, and they're going to sell those modules to private tourists who want to go, but they'll also sell space on those modules for research. And they'll be simpler to operate, do your research there than through NASA, and so they'll get customers. There's no doubt about that. And so that research will start to go on. Eventually, Axiom space modules will be independent of ISS. They plan to have it designed so that when ISS is going to be decommissioned, they can separate it. Now, if they find that they can make a profit in space and they can improve the living quarters of their passengers, their customers, with a ring station, I can bet you they will be looking to do that very quickly.
Let's go to John in San Diego. Squeeze you in here, John. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, George, Mr. Zuman. And what the gentleman said just earlier is perfect. I already thought about that myself in regards to automated spaceships where they just go and collect food, and the company would just rent that out, and you just pull up with any company, and they get their food from an automatic robotic spaceship. That was regarding that spaceship for the survival of people in that area working in space. And we are now, as a country, we have now a space force. And I would hope that in your conversations with the Native Americans, we are now an American world going into aerospace and the universe. So with the American natives, they should get together between all the tribes and get an emblem or a sign or something to put on their flag. So when we go into space, they are with us. We arrived here with Columbus and whoever, and they had to come out from Portugal. That was our space. This is now our space, and they are part of us. So I hope that they will get together and put something on that flag. In New Mexico, near Hatch, there's a big property that we're going to have a space program, and Mr. Zimmerman can get together with his friends and make a space academy for the newer generation, because that property was already scheduled to the airspace is very clear, and they can do a lot of tests. And in Chula Vista, the NASA gave a grant to the library for children to begin their mental processes to do that. And I just hope now that when we go into space, I'm looking for Wizards of the woman that's going to be having the first baby in space.
That would be intriguing.
You know, John, you symbolize what I see of as America, because you're brimming with ideas, all of which are interesting. Some are good, some maybe not, but it doesn't matter. You follow your dreams. You figure out what the idea that works. You find the idea that other people want to buy, and you make it happen.
Are you an American if you're born on the moon?
Well, now that's a whole question we could devote an hour to. That has to do with the stupid outer space treaty that prevents the United States from claiming any territory or establishing.
That's right. So if it's not our territory.
He's trying to address that, George, right now, and we'll see how that plays out.
Robert, my friend, thank you for being on the program. Really appreciate it. Robert Zimmerman, our space historian, his website, BehindTheBlack.com. It's his 10th anniversary. Go ahead and look at his website. In a moment, we will be back to talk about dreams.